Welcome to a SearchSoftwareQuality.com audiocast, Software Testing, How to Know When You're Ready to Start Testing. Our speaker is Michael Kelly, Director of Testing and Quality Assurance for Interactions. I'm Jan Stafford, Executive Editor of SearchSoftwareQuality.com and your moderator. This audiocast is part of our series of audiocast interviews with Michael Kelly, in which he gives tips on best practices for software testing. Thanks for joining us, Michael.
Thank you for having me.
For our listeners, if you have any problems with the sound or quality of this audiocast, please write to us at editor@searchsoftwarequality.com, and our tech support team will get in touch with you within 24 hours. Now let's get started with our interview. So, Michael, when do you know you're ready to start some level of testing?
Well, I really like James Bach. Answer to that question, and he had a quite controversial blog post on it, and that is, I'm ready to start testing as soon as I have software to test. The reason why it was a little controversial is because, I think there's two answers to that question. There's the personal answer, which is, you know, if there's software out there, I want to be looking at it, and I want to be an asset to the team, and I want to, you know, be in there providing feedback when I can. So anytime, you know, there's a developer who's got some code who needs some testing, I want to be involved. Then I think there's another dynamic which, you know, has to be acknowledged, which is that there's also a team dynamic, and that if I'm in an environment where I have to juggle multiple commitments, right, your testing team or testers on a team might be working on multiple projects at the same time, you can't necessarily just have, you know, a mindset of let's just jump in there and start testing. While that's good, and I kind of want to encourage that in the individual team members, from a project perspective, you know, there's a little bit more planning that has to happen. And that's where, you know, you typically see things like entrance criteria and stuff like that. So when I'm trying to manage a team, I do work to establish some, you know, minimum entry criteria. It's typically things like, you know, the environments have been set up and test data has been deployed and, you know, some level of unit testing has taken place. You know, code peer reviews have been done and stuff like that, just to make sure that, you know, when we get the software set up and we start our testing, we're not going to be immediately hit by, you know, 15 blocking issues that, you know, cause us to waste time, not necessarily testing time, but, you know, just calendar time, which on, you know, for a team that's juggling multiple projects can be a pretty big deal. So, you know, I think, you know, personally, I'm ready to start today, right now, and as test manager, you know, I think with every project it makes sense to create, you know, some minimum test criteria, testing entry criteria to get the ball rolling. That way you've got some indication that the time you spend is going to be fruitful.
And how do you structure your testing work, and what are the key aspects you always add to your plan?
When possible, I try to structure my testing using session-based test management. Session-based test management is built on the idea of a testing session. Session is a time box period, usually about 45 minutes. And in that time box, the tester executes what's called a charter. And a charter is really a fancy way of saying it's a testing mission for that session. And it details out the coverage, so, you know, what the tester's going to be testing, and what risks they're looking for. So, you know, an example would be, you know, I want a performance test, web app X, and I'm looking for the breakpoint when I add, you know, some number of users doing X type of transactions. So, you know, just something that says, here's what I'm trying to do, here's what I'm covering, and here are the specific types of problems that I'm looking for. That's a charter. Now, saying that I structure my work that way doesn't really change much in the planning stages. That process is more about, the session-based test management process is more about execution and management of the testing as it takes place. Planning, regardless of how I, you know, I structure my execution, planning is about the same. Karen Johnson and I did a webcast for Search Software Quality a few months ago on how we do our test design and planning. And in that webcast, we outlined, you know, our typical planning process, which for us was pretty similar. For the most part, you know, we look to cover the same big items. It's logistics, what kind of test cases or scenarios are you going to be covering, what are the resources you need. It contains all the dependencies and risks that you need to focus on while you're going to, you know, while you're planning and doing your testing. You know, I think when I go to structure my work, those are the things I want to tackle first in the planning phase. And then, you know, if I can, I'll use session-based test management to actually execute the testing. If I can't, and on some projects you don't get the luxury of choosing, I mean, it's the methodology of the project team. You know, I'll structure it in whatever way that that methodology entails.
Now, you were talking about charters. Can you explain a little bit more about how you use them?
Sure. Some testers like to write scripted test cases. I like to write charters. And a subtle distinction, I talked about charters a little bit ago. You know, scripted test cases are kind of the typical, you know, actor does this, they should see this, verify this. Actor does this, they should see this, verify this. And they might include, you know, test data and some setup and post-testing tasks and stuff like that. I think on the types of projects I work on, I tend to think that that's a little heavy of a process. I tend to work in agile project teams lately, and I tend to work on product development, not, you know, projects that are for IT companies or for regulated industries. So for me, the chartering process is just an extension of my planning process. You know, I said in a previous podcast when I like to assess kind of what I'm testing, I think in lists, and I make huge sets of lists, and then I eventually can convert those into charters. That's kind of a natural transition for me, because as I'm making those lists, when I think about coverage and risk, I'm kind of grouping stuff together, and I'll leave it that way for a while, and then I'll kind of keep refactoring, adding more stuff, taking some stuff away, and I just keep doing that until I kind of get a natural grouping of what I believe to be is about 45 minutes worth of testing. If I don't feel it's about 45 minutes, then it's up to me to kind of refactor it into smaller chunks. The goal there being, and, you know, the more, like anything, the more you do it, the better you get at estimating how much time it's going to take to do something and accounting for setup and accounting for blocking issues and stuff like that. The more you do that, the better you get at it. Once I'm done, once I say, look, I've looked at the risks, I've decided what I'm going to cover, I think these are the charters that I'm going to go forward with, so I've got my first batch of charters, then I go through and I assign a priority to each one of them, and I do that in a way that kind of forces me to force rank them. So that way, when I'm ready to test, I start at the top of the list and just start working my way down. However, there's a little gotcha there. After each time I run a charter, I have to make some decisions. First, I have to decide, is there any new charters that need to be created after this test I just run? Because anytime I'm running a test, I'm learning something new. I'm interacting with the software. I'm learning more about it. You know, when I, again, scoping something for 45 minutes, you have some anticipation of what you're going to find there in terms of how well the code's going to work, what types of issues you're going to hit. So if I go through a charter and I don't find the types of issues that I thought I was going to see, you know, that may tell me that, you know, other charters I have may need to change based on that. So, you know, the first thing I need to do is, you know, figure out, are there new charters I need to add that I don't have? And then the second thing is, maybe there's some charters I need to take away because maybe the risk profile has changed enough that I can deprioritize those. And then the third thing I need to do is reorder the list. So once I've done that, run a test, add new charters, take charters away, reorder the list, then I grab the next one and run the next test. If I'm doing that as part of a team, then that happens, hopefully, real time across the team. Sometimes better than others. It depends on the team and the tools. But in general, that's the way I work with charters.
And how do your test ideas change after you see what you're going to be testing, and how do you use that exposure to help the rest of the development team?
Well, I think my test ideas change in a number of ways. First, I may have really misunderstood something the first time that I looked at it. You know, once you get a working piece of software, that's kind of the agile idea of, you know, get code out there so people can see it. You know, I think, you know, sometimes you kind of, you know, hand to forehead, oh, that's what they meant. And so you need to go back to the drawing board for some of your tests. And I, you know, I think that that's a big part of, in software development in general, a movement towards iterations and working in smaller chunks. That's why early testing is always a big focus of mine, and that's kind of why I like to cultivate the mindset of, you know, I'm ready to test right now, even if I can't log bugs yet. So, you know, I might go sit down next to a developer while he's just bringing something up in his local environment. It's not really ready for testing, But if I can look at that code, and even if I'm not able to log bugs yet, I can always learn more about what I'm going to be testing, and that's critical to me. So another way to learn is to, you know, sit down with the programmers as they're doing the work, you know, look at some initial screenshots if you get them, look at the code if you can get early copies of it, and that's just going to help you when you go through your chartering process or your test planning process. Just as important, you know, I think when you go back and you know, you're doing your testing and you're doing your execution, you know, there's a really important communication piece there, not just in, you know, with the testing team, as you guys figure out, you know, what charters need to be prioritized higher or lower or removed or added. All of that communication, because that's all about risk, needs to somehow make it back into the rest of the project team. You know, there are common ways of doing that. In Agile teams, you'll typically have a daily scrum meeting, and you can talk about the testing that took place there and how kind of the risk profile for the application has changed over, you know, since the last day, what charters you've added, which ones you've taken away. I really like kind of, you know, daily emails to the team that just kind of say, look, here's what we got through. You know, here were the quick summary of the results. Here's how we're feeling about the testing. And then I think, you know, commonly anywhere you work, there's always going to be a status meeting somewhere along the way in the project. And that's, of course, you know, a more formal time to talk through, you know, what we've exposed and what that might mean to development or the business or project management or even to testing.
When do you start doing preliminary performance testing or determine what tests can be automated and why?
Well, here again, you know, I like to start this as early as I possibly can as well. I'm a big fan of implementing performance tests at the unit level for key components when that's possible. In service-oriented architectures, testing for each service as it's brought online can be a great way to start. You don't. The reason why I say this is because I think a lot of teams get trapped when they say, you know, we can't start performance testing early because we don't have performance test requirements yet. And I kind of think that's a fallacy to some degree. You know, you do need performance test requirements. You have to understand what the expectation is and how things need to operate. But early on, you know, if you get some baseline scripts in place and you're just starting to monitor your performance, especially if you're still going to be making changes to that code, you know, you'll get the ability to see that each change as you make it or each set of changes as you make it, is that making you faster or slower? And that, you know, simple monitoring of, you know, I've got this piece of code, you know, today it ran at this number of milliseconds or seconds or, you know, whatever your metric is. And tomorrow I check in some changes and I run it again and it's X percent slower or faster. That's fantastic feedback. Because even without knowing how fast it's going to ultimately have to run or before it's integrated with other pieces, first, you know, that tells you whether or not you've tuned it optimally at that component level. But also, you know, 6 months later, when you've got a whole system and you're trying to do performance testing from end to end, the ability to go back and look at how each of the individual components performed can be critical to the debugging process and trying to go back and understand where you need to start tuning. So I'm a big fan of that, when you can do it and when it makes sense. And there's a lot of technologies out there where it's difficult to do that. With test automation, the answer is a little bit different. In test automation, I'm always looking for the low-hanging fruit. Some tests are just easier to automate than others. If you have a well-defined API, like in a service-oriented architecture, you know, I'll automate as early as I possibly can. If you're talking a simple SOAP message to test basic functionality, I'm there, and we're going to have those tests right out of the gate. If it's a little bit more difficult of an interface, if it's a GUI interface, or if it's an interface that I know is going to change over the next couple of months, or even weeks or days, then I'm a bit more gun-shy, and I'll hold off until we have a better idea of what we're looking at. Now, that's the actual scripting, maybe, of, you know, the test cases to interface with the application. There still might be other automation work that you can do up front, you know, while they're still programming the software. Test data is a big problem for test automation a lot of times, and building that out and figuring out how you're going to manage it, building frameworks for automation, all of that stuff can be done up front. And then I think, you know, just to add on to that a little bit, and places where I've looked at doing more complicated types of test automation, like model-based test automation or high-volume test automation, designing those you know, I think really starts as soon as you start designing the application, and, you know, starting to develop those out and get proof of concepts, because those can be a little bit more difficult to build out and manage. You know, I'll start doing that as soon as I possibly can.
Now, when do you start regression testing?
Well, it mostly just depends on the, well, I guess maybe I should back up a second. There's two types of regression testing. There's automated regression testing and manual regression testing. And my answer to that might change a little bit based on which one we're talking about. But in general, I think it mostly depends on the size of the regression test bed you're talking about. If possible, you know, we'll run those tests as often as we possibly can. However, you know, for anything but unit level tests, you know, it's often not going to be as often as you'd like to do it. I'll typically start automated regression testing once I feel the major changes are complete. You know, it could be when the first release comes in for testing. It could be after the last round of code has been delivered to the test environment and we're officially frozen. I think it really just depends on the methodology you're in and what strategy you're using to deliver your code to the test team. Of course, if there's time, you'll run it multiple times. You may not want to wait until the end. It really depends on how many resources you have and what you need to focus on. From a manual testing perspective, you know, I think with a well-run team, which really understands, you know, the new testing that needs to be done as well as the regression testing that needs to be done, some of that regression testing can be seeded in real time. So if I have feature X, or if I have a change to feature X that I'm testing as part of this release, and I know that there are, you know, 12 regression test cases for feature X, while I'm there testing feature X, I might very well likely get to run, you know, 10 or 12 of those regression test cases as well. And so figuring out a strategy for managing that is often something that's worth spending some time thinking about up front and talking through with the team how you're going to tackle that. And then maybe at the end of the test cycle, you only run a, you know, a limited set of those regression test cases to make sure nothing broke. And just to go back to automated testing for a second, one of the reasons why I really think you need to be careful about when you start that and how many times you want to run it. You know, a lot of people will say it's automated, run it as many times as you possibly can. And as a general principle, I agree with that. I mean, you put the investment in, you want to get that investment out, but it's really not free to run it multiple times. There's time to review the results. As you're reviewing results, you have to look into possible issues. You're going to have to resolve those issues. There can be setup and monitoring costs, depending on how you've implemented it. So you just need to step back and weigh that against the testing taking place, because then a lot of times there's an opportunity cost to running maybe 3-4 rounds of regression testing versus running one round and doing testing for the new stuff that's in this code. And you just need to be focused on what's most valuable at the time.
Thanks, Michael. That's the last of the questions for this Q&A. And thank you to our listeners. You can submit your questions regarding this audio cast to Michael Kelly via email at editor@certsoftwarequality.com. Michael's answers to your questions will appear in our Ask the Expert section. Thanks again, Michael.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
That concludes today's audio cast on how to know when you're ready to start testing. This is Jan Stafford signing off. Have a great day.